This is Terrio Media.
Hey, strap in. It's time for the Epic Real Estate Investing Show. We'll be your guides as we navigate the housing market, the landscape of creative financing strategies, and everything you need to swap that office chair for a beach chair. If you're looking for some one-on-one help, meet us at reias.com.
Let's go.
All right, please help me welcome to the show, Ms. Lynette Zhang. Lynette, welcome to Epic Real Estate Investing.
I'm very excited to be here, Matt. Thank you so much for having me.
It's my honor. I'm glad to have you here. You happen to be covering a subject I've always had interest in, but I've never stopped and done the research. So I get to talk to you about it. So that's awesome.
Excellent. Well, I've done lots of research over many, many years because I've been in this on some level since 1964.
Very good. So you've been in this. Can you explain to us what this is? And so everyone can catch up.
Well, in the markets on some level. So back in 1964, and actually for quite some time after that, it was learning about how the tangible assets work inside of a market and how they go from undervaluation to fair valuation to overvaluation to fair valuation to undervaluation. And it's just a constant loop. Mm-hmm. And so understanding where you are inside of that trend cycle and also making sure that what you're positioning into is quality that is in an undervalued circumstance in a positive trend. And then I entered banking when I was 15, studied business finance in college. And so I was a banker for many years, but became a stockbroker in 1986. So I was there on Black Monday, which was the best day I could have ever been a stockbroker, no doubt about it. So I've been, you know, a student of the markets, all the different markets. And that's what I mean by this. And then the gold market is something that started for me back then in the 60s.
Got it. So what are you doing now? Who do you help and how do you help them?
Oh, good question. Well, we have Zhang Enterprises. And what I've built, I've studied currency and currency life cycle since 1987. And what physical gold and physical silver are sound money. This is money that is above all central banks and all governments. And in your possession is the only financial, well, according to the Bank for International Settlements, gold is the only financial asset that runs zero counterparty risk. Everything else is, frankly, pretty much all counterparty risk. And so at Zhang Enterprises, we take my studies of currencies and currency life cycles and the patterns that always repeat around this, and we help clients build out a sound money strategy foundation and portfolio. And then, you know, you guys, obviously, you're all about real estate. So there are some certain risks that real estate runs as we go through the transitions from one currency system into the next, which is where we are right now. And it's how to bridge that gap and protect your investment, as well as have the ability to build it out even further, since historically during these transitions, 25 ounces of gold buys an entire city block, buildings and all. Mm-hmm. So depending upon your circumstance, if you're an investor using that for income, then we can help you retain that income as we go through things that are similar, but will be very much worse. What people experienced during COVID when they couldn't charge, they weren't collecting their rent, but they still had these expenses. Mm-hmm. So the strategy is based upon your goals, your circumstance, and what you're trying to protect. And I mean, there are a lot of crossovers with real estate in here and how to protect what you've already accumulated. Make sure that if you're using it for income, that income is protected. And also put you in a position to accumulate even more as we're going through this.
Got it. I thought about this for a very long time. And when I first heard about the whole tulip bubble, the tulips were given all the value. I wanted the tulips and the tulips crashed, right? And then I've seen a lot of similarities that I felt like with crypto as well. I think about like, well, what makes gold any different? What gives gold its value?
I love that question. Thank you for asking me.
Yeah, I've always thought that. I didn't know how the person to ask, and here you are.
And here I am. Mm-hmm. And people need to understand this, and this is true for both gold and silver. Okay. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about the tulip bubbles and the crypto bubbles, for me, having studied currencies and been in these markets for so long, there was no doubt that when I saw Bitcoin born, it was born in when? January of 2009. Well, one was this free money, the QE born, March of 2009. But I was 100% certain in September of 2008, and actually before that, but that the system, the current system died, and it was simply put on life support. Okay. So here's the difference between the crypto bubble, which is about getting people comfortable and used to digital payments so that they can transition us into a completely surveillance crypto economy, digital economy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The reason why gold has its value is because it is used in every single sector of the global economy. So it's used in solar, it's used in electronics, it's used in space travel, it's used in food, it's used in art, it's used in dentistry, it's used in the financial system, and on and on and on. So both gold and silver, this is true for both of them, are used in all of these areas, and they have never been able to figure out in a lab how to duplicate the specific properties and qualities that both gold and silver have. Mm-hmm. So you have the broadest base of function and the broadest base of buyer. And that's what, even though things ebb and flow, which is natural, that is why gold has and silver have never ever gone to zero, because they have such a broad base of buyer. Additionally, and where are cryptos used? One place. Mm-hmm. Same thing with dollars or bolivars or any of them, the government-based money, it's used in one place, the financial system, and as a tool of barter and trade, okay? Additionally, and this is really critical for people to understand, it takes labor and energy to pull gold and silver out of the ground, mine it, and then convert it into whatever form they're going to convert it in. But gold does not get used up in production. Silver does. Silver gets used up in production. So it's a diminishing, there's a diminishing supply, but we can account for like 98% of all of the gold that has ever been mined. This takes a lot of energy to mine it, but this energy is then stored for use as it travels to those different economic areas. Whereas when you're looking at Bitcoin or any of those cryptocurrencies, it takes a tremendous amount of energy, and that energy is used up. It is not stored. So stored energy, used up energy. Every place, one place. So I'm going to be doing a piece next week, actually, on stable coins. That would be an important piece to see and share, because it's an extraordinarily, it's a Trojan horse. Cryptos are a Trojan horse, really, to get adoption, to get people used to it, to move it away. But here's the other big difference.
Mm-hmm.
When they were creating money to begin with, they said, okay, money has to have four functions. It needs to be a tool of measure so they can price things, right? Mm-hmm. A tool of barter so people will accept it. A short-term store of value so that you are fairly paid for your labor today. And a long-term store of value so that no matter when you use it, it holds its purchasing power intact so that you are always fairly paid for your labor. But the problem for governments on a gold and silver standard is that if they taxed you, you'd know about it and you might not agree. Mm-hmm. And plus, gold in the system creates, or forces, I should say, fiscal responsibility. So there are limits on how much of this stuff they can print, right? And devalue. Well, governments didn't like that, so they transitioned us, or began the transition of a fiat, which means by decree, government-backed system in 1913. And by 1971, when Nixon closed the gold window, which makes it sound so nice, but actually what that is he handed over full control of inflation to central banks. And I know that it says the Federal Reserve, but they are not a government agency. They are an independent banking corporation, and they don't hold any reserves. So what this stuff did, right, was remove the long-term store of value. So one function gone, because everybody now knows if you get a dollar and you hold on to it, inflation is going to erode its purchasing power, right? So that was by design. They knew that that would happen. And now we're down to three functions. When we convert to the digital system, and these are the central banker's words, not mine, then there will be no limit to how low they can push negative rates. And I'll go on and put my technical neck on the line here. We will see negative rates in the US. We will see it all around the world, but we will see negative rates in here. And that would eliminate the short-term store of value to make sure that at least at the moment that you get paid, you're fairly paid for your labor. And in a digital system, instead of the four functions that money is supposed to have, it will have two functions. But it will give them the ability to pay attention to everything that you do. And additionally, when they want to tax you, well, if it's, there's nothing out of the system, what are you going to do? They can pull it out of the account. We see it in Singapore. We see it in China. We see it all around the world. And I don't think that this time is different. And I don't think that the U.S. is different.
Well, gosh, the state of California will do it with your fiat money. They'll reach in right there and grab it. No problem.
Well, don't they, though? Absolutely. They
California's gangster. That's why I left that state.
Yeah.
So you're saying it'll only have two functions. So it'll have the tool of measure and the tool of barter.
Barter, right, yeah. Right. I have yet to really be able to fully discover, but I think I may have, because stable coins, that it's a bit complicated, but the stable coins, and you always have to pay attention to the way things are named because they're typically the opposite. And we have certainly seen stable coins go away, go below a dollar. Yeah. But the stable coin, the CBDCs are not very palatable to the public. They don't like them. They're having trouble getting them adopted in the places and the countries where they've attempted to use them. Mm-hmm. But stable coins, and the CBDCs are created by central banks. Stable coins are created by corporations. And they appear to be a bit more palatable, especially to the public in the third world countries. Mm-hmm. And they are, with the new regulations that just were passed like a couple of weeks ago, I mean, this is really recent stuff, that they must be backed one-to-one with U.S. dollars. So what they're trying to do, what current administration is trying to do, is create demand for dollars as our allies are actually losing their taste for dollars. And in reality, Japan and China, who were the largest buyers of our treasuries, have been buying less and less. And actually, you could even call it a run on the treasuries since 2013. So President Trump is trying to create dollar demand because 99% of all the stable coins that are issued are dollar denominated. So whether or not it's going to work and what that actually means, it will not protect your purchasing power because they're still tied to the dollar. But they're trying to keep this thing going for a little bit longer.
Branding is everything. That's why they put that word stable in front of it, right?
Yep.
All right. So I took some notes here. Here's the one thing that you said. You said gold, and the difference between really gold and silver is the fact that silver gets consumed and gold does not.
Let me expand on that just a little bit, because silver, yes, it definitely does get used up in consumption, and it straddles the manufacturing markets a little bit more than gold. So gold is the primary currency metal. And when they do a reset of a currency, they do it against gold. Silver is the secondary monetary metal. And I've done tons and tons of studies on this. silver maintains your ability to buy the same amount of goods and services. Gold expands your ability to do it. But primary currency metal is gold. Secondary is silver. And this is those are the reasons why.
Got it. Okay. So you said gold is used across broader sectors, right? It has broader utility. You didn't say utility, but that's the word I was getting. Is that accurate?
100%.
Okay. So that was always my thing. Like, well, if someone just gave me a brick of gold and, you know, all hell broke loose and we had an Armageddon, what would I do with this brick of gold? It would only have value if the other person I was bartering with.
Well, you don't want to barter with gold. You want to barter with silver.
It is kind of a doomsday play though, right? It's kind of a, like if all hell breaks loose type play, like it's a preservation of wealth, right?
Yes and no. I mean, absolutely. But I run charts on a constant basis of US dollar against a different foreign currency, spot gold, which is, and spot silver, which are contracts against these currencies. And 100% of the time, those spot markets, which are easy to manipulate, and they do because a rising gold price is an indication of a failing currency, an indication of a looming crisis, right? So they suppress those prices. Mm-hmm. Even with the suppression, it still outperforms the dollar against every single currency. Go on any currency converter website and put it in and see it for yourself. So on a regular basis, for example, here's a great example.
I'm not arguing with you by any means, and I'm sure the charts say all of that. But what I'm saying is like I still can't get past the idea where it has its value because we say it does.
No, it has its value because of the demand.
Because people want it. Like, so they agree that it has value. That's why they want it.
But they use it in solar. They use it in jewelry. They use it in electronics. They use it in food. They use it in art. So it isn't just because people want it. It's because it has use in the broad economy in every single sector.
Got
Does that make
so
sense?
So it gets used in all those things. So how is it different than silver then? Like if they're both used in electronics, one's consumed and one isn't.
Yeah. I mean, basically that is, and silver is more of an industrial metal. So even though they're both used across every single sector, I have both, right? So it's not, I don't pick, oh, I'm going to have gold over silver or silver over gold. I look at what is it that I'm trying to accomplish. So to your earlier point, I can't see taking a brick of gold to barter for strawberries. Well, no, because there is no change, right?
Right.
So what you want to take, for me, silver is about that day-to-day barterability, a basket of strawberries, a dozen eggs, and it maintains your purchasing power. So for example, a BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, food basket in 1971, comparing that same food basket in 2025, the cost of that food basket has gone up, don't hold me to it because I have the data right in front of me, but I'll be pretty close, about 2,900%, whereas spot silver has gone up about 3,200%. So you can still buy that same food basket, but during that same time frame, spot gold has gone up over 13,000%. So not only can you buy that same food basket, but you can buy a lot more stuff, right? And that is not inside of a crisis. That is just as a protection from the inflation, from the government, the central banks doing this. So you need it. You should always, 100% of the time, have a sound money foundation. But depending upon where we are in the trend cycle, that would determine how much of your portfolio was positioned in it. But it's also a true diversifier, right? Because it's tangible. It's in your possession and it's decentralized because I can, I mean, I have travel bracelets and things that when I travel, I take with me. And if I, for whatever reason, my cards don't work or they won't take the cash that I have gold and silver with me all the time. And it's just a day-to-day protection. Now, in an Armageddon situation, and basically, I encourage everybody to go to my favorite website, which is the Federal Reserve Education Department, the FRED, F-R-E-D.
Oh, yeah.
And in the search bar, you put in purchasing power of the consumer dollar. And what you will see is the loss of the purchasing power and how close we are to the Fed actually admitting that the value of the dollar is zero. But there are 4,800 currencies that have existed that do not exist anymore.
Right.
Because that's what happens to every single one of these government-based currencies. And that's why even going into the crypto realm and the stablecoin realm that's tied to the dollar, it's not going to protect your purchasing power. It's going to create demand for dollars. So maybe they can keep this thing going a little bit longer, but it won't get us out of this mess. The system has to reset.
So does gold actually increase in value, or is it just because the dollar is devaluing?
No, it really is because the currencies are devaluing. Really
right.
Good point, Matt. Mm-hmm. No, an ounce of gold is an ounce of gold is an ounce of gold.
Mm-hmm.
It has the same functionality, but you have the broadest base of buyer. So when you're going into this fight, you know, you have a choice. Do you want something that has one buyer, one place that it's used, or something that's used in many, many, many places?
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to play devil's advocate. And I'm not arguing with you. Yes. I'm actually genuinely interested. So these are thoughts.
Actually, okay. You can ask me anything, Matt. I hope I'm not coming across as defensive.
No, I think I'm just used to people coming on here agreeing with me. So I'm just like, I'm happy to talk to you. So this is good.
And I'm happy to talk to you too. There's no question that's off limits. None.
All right.
None. And you don't even have to be nice and I'll still like you.
Okay. So with real estate, it has something like where I like real estate so much and I'm into diversification. So I'm not saying it's the end all be all, but the reason I favor it so much is because it has such an extreme utility value to a human being.
Yep.
And we did have Armageddon. At least as long as I was barricaded in my house, I still had a roof over my head. And if someone wanted something from me and no more dollars were like, there were no banks and the dollars had no value, I feel like I might want to trade more likely to trade for a chicken than a gold bar because I want to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm kind of looking at when it comes to like this currency transition. And I get it. It's always transitioning, right? When people say, well, what happens if the dollar crashes? What happens to your real estate and all this kind of stuff? Well, I was like, well, they're just going to buy real estate with whatever is the accepted currency at the time. So I really don't care about the currency.
That's not really true historically. Now, maybe this time is different. But real estate runs several risks. And I want to tell you that in many ways, I agree 100% with what you just said, because you have to have a place to make your last stand. And I'm going to back up to move forward because I was getting ready to retire shortly before 2008 happened. Mm-hmm. And I was living in a little 2-bedroom condo. And God forbid you put a plant in a pot outside. I got a $50 ding for it like every damn time. It was so annoying. But when 2008 happened, because of all of my studies on what happens, to your point, you're 100% right that the biggest issue for people becomes food. That is the single biggest issue. Mm-hmm. So what I did instead of retiring is, first of all, I knew I couldn't because I don't know too many other people that have studied. Actually, I don't know any other person that studied currency life cycles and really understands them like I do. So I have an important message for people. But I bought this little half acre. I am in dead central Phoenix. Do I look like a farmer to you?
Right.
No, I do not. But I know, knowing that food is the single biggest issue for people and making sure that my family could eat became a huge priority. And so I bought this property. It's a little half acre. And I started digging up the lawn and starting learning how to grow food. And I do have chickens. I have eggs. I have meat birds. I have tilapia. I have crawfish. I have nut trees. I have fruit trees. I have vegetables. A good 85% of my diet comes directly from the food that I'm creating. And in 2020, as many of you might recall, it was very hard to get stuff from the grocery stores.
Yep.
I had no problem and I had plenty to share. So 100%. Now, here's the challenge that presents for real estate during these periods of time. Number one is if you have debt on that, right? Now, they can't in this country because we have 30-year mortgages, which is really a huge advantage. No other country has that, but we do. So you're locking in your mortgage at this rate. However, when we go through a crisis like this, you might have some trouble paying that mortgage payment. And so then, like we saw in 2008, a lot of mortgages got restructured, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even now, if you're running late on your mortgage, they're going to go, come and restructure it. Part of the strategy, because gold is so severely undervalued, part of the strategy is identifying what that true fundamental value is. And when they do that overnight reset and they reset this garbage against sound money, then you take whatever you need and you, bam, pay that mortgage off, because gold behaves a little bit differently during those overnight resets. And while everything resets, on average, so I can't say this is exactly how it's going to unfold this time, but I can tell you that globally, on average, we usually have about a 9-month window of opportunity before the gold then also gets reset. And then it starts to climb higher and faster than everything else again. But when they lop off those zeros, and in Venezuela, when they did that first currency reset, because they've been pushing, suppressing the price so much, it's like a spring. You move your hand and it shoots in a direction, and overnight spot gold went up 3,500%. So we calculate out how much, here's your mortgage, how much gold would you need today at the current fundamental value to pay that mortgage off? Okay, this is, let's say it took 10 ounces. By the time that system reset, you might only need a fraction. This is a fractional, a $2.5 or $5 gold coin. You might only need a quarter of an ounce to pay off that mortgage. Bam, paid off. That's one thing.
So this is why you want long-term fixed debt.
Heck yeah, you do.
Speaking my language now. Very good.
Okay. But look, this is exactly the same strategy that the government utilizes to
I say that all the time. And the people in my YouTube comments think I'm absolutely nutso.
Oh, no, it's true. So long-term debt is fine as long as you can pay that off like that if you need to. And that's the gold part of this.
Because that's a big question, is what happens to your debt, because inflation being an equal opportunity money destroyer.
Right.
What happens to your debt when the dollar collapses?
Well, what happens to that debt, if it's variable rate, you ain't ever getting out of debt. And Globally, on average, 80% of the population ends up in abject poverty. And it's the middle class that has that greatest shift in standard of living. And I think we can see that now, right? But also the other risk that real estate runs are property taxes. Because let's face it, governments generate their income via taxation. And what they call property is immovable property, because I cannot put my house on my back and move it. So you have to have the ability to pay those property taxes. Or even during the Depression, you have that house paid off in full. If you could not pay those property taxes, you lost that property. So for that, that's barterable gold. I like fractional. When you hear anybody say fractional, that's less than an ounce.
So they're like little pieces, what you're talking about.
Fresh. Yes, little pieces. Mm-hmm. And based upon the current amount in property taxes, and we've calculated out how much barterable gold do you need? I prefer gold for that than silver. How much do you need to always be able to pay those property taxes? And you have secured your property. If you can always pay your property taxes and boom, pay off your mortgage like nobody's business. But actually what ends up happening in terms of the currency, and they're starting to nibble in Zimbabwe right now on real estate. It's too soon. It's definitely too soon. Mm-hmm. But they are, because actually against gold, property becomes extraordinarily cheap. during that period of time. And so historically, on average, so I can't guarantee that that's what's going to happen coming up, but I can tell you 100% that on average, 25 ounces of gold buys an entire city block, buildings and all.
So you're talking about this, if the currency was to reset, you're saying we have this 9-month window. So in that 9-month window is when the opportunities are if you're loaded with gold.
Some of them. They're actually throughout the whole reset circumstance. And so when we build our portfolios, it's done in a layered approach so that it all depends on where we are in this cycle. And then what do you need to support your goals, to sustain your standard of living, to put yourself in a place where you can protect the assets that you've already accumulated, and then also to put you in a position to be able to gather more assets when we see what is called a cup formation, which works with every single asset. I don't really care which one you're looking at. Mm-hmm. And it indicates that smart money has recognized the undervalued circumstance and quietly begun to accumulate. So there are, it's not just like a one and done. It's kind of like, where are we in this trend cycle? And what do you need to support the different goals and the different things that you've established for yourself so that on the other side of this mess, you're actually in a much better position than you were when you went in?
Got it. So I have a good friend. You might know him, Jason Hartman. Do you know Jason?
I do know Jason. Okay. Yes, very well. And his puppies.
Yeah, I love him dearly. So he thinks we'll always have the Federal Reserve currency just because, and he always shows a picture of the giant U.S. military. Like, because we're going to force it to be the reserve currency.
Well, it could be the reserve currency, although, boy, things are shifting and power is shifting. Mm-hmm. And even reserves are shifting, because if you understand what it means to be the world reserve currency, what it means is that if you are a government, a corporation, or certainly we know it on an individual level, buying something in a different country that has a different currency, well, guess what? You had no choice but to use US dollars for oil or wood, lumber, or anything. The reality is that we began to lose that status in 2000. And you can see it because that was the first time that the Federal Reserve actually had to buy back our government debt. Really quietly, advanced economies don't do that. Mm-hmm. No, they don't. But we've been doing it since 2000. It just became a good thing in 2008. It's not a good thing. But we have gone down, I think the current numbers are somewhere around 54% of all trade that's done in dollars. And what we're also, and this is the interesting part of the stablecoin stuff. I'm telling you, it is fascinating, right? Because we've got a huge trend of de-dollarization that's happening. And it's not just with the BRICS nations, but now we are kind of, pardon me, pissing off our allies that we need them to buy our debt. So we are losing that status, no doubt about it, and no country maintains it forever. And even if they do, you can't stop the erosion in purchasing power because they can't stop doing this,
right?
They can't stop printing. They have no fiscal responsibility. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, you have other countries that are going in to fill that gap. But what they've been actually creating, and I'm referring now, this is my opinion. It may or may not happen. I do not know, but it's the most logical one to me. The International Monetary Fund, the IMF, has a currency that they created back in 1969, originally created to take over as the world reserve currency from the US, and it's called the SDR, Special Drawing Rights. It's just a name. It doesn't mean anything.
Terrible branding. Oh, go ahead.
Terrible branding. But what that actually is, it's a basket of currencies so that the International Monetary Fund is working on a universal currency that would contain every single currency inside of that basket. And therefore, it makes it so much easier to transact business all around the world. And my personal opinion is since it's been around since 69, and everybody has a bunch of it. And they created what's called a substitution fund, which means that if you are sitting on dollars or dollar-denominated assets as a government or as a corporation, you can simply send those to the IMF. They will put it into the substitution fund, wash it, and boom, what you now have is an SDR-denominated asset or instrument. Frankly, that makes the most sense to me. It's been around. Anybody can go into the USPS, the United States Postal Service, and up in their search bar, put SDR and see what comes up. So it's just a very easy transition and a very easy way to create a global money. And I think that's what's going to be the new world reserve currency. And I could be wrong. But I don't think I'm usually not
all right.
Very wrong about this stuff.
But it gave me another video idea, so that's good. I've done a couple of videos, like almost probably 95% of my video content is all on real estate. But I've done a couple of things on the dollar and what happens if the dollar collapses. I did something. I just did deep research one weekend on BRICS, and that video blew up. So I did a follow-up, and that one blew up also. So there's a lot of interest in currencies and what's going to happen with money, right? What do you think is the probability that BRICS makes any headway? I kind of came out believing they were going to get us, and now I'm believing like they're not going to get us at all.
No, and there are a few reasons. Number one, the currency that they're proposing, and this is not the BRICS nations or conglomerate themselves. All they're really looking to do is create cross-border trade. Mm-hmm. So you don't need a currency that's backed by gold, but the one that everybody's talking about that you probably researched would have a component of 40% gold in it. Mm-hmm. Here's the problem. Number one, with the pressure that President Trump is putting on these different countries, you know, India, which is part of the BRICS, as well as Brazil, which is part of the BRICS, are no longer supporting a unified currency. So there's some breakdown there. Mm-hmm. However, even with the currency that some were proposing, with that 40%, what they call backing, be very careful about when anybody says something is backed, because they're using the term backing and pegging interchangeably, and they are not interchangeable. Here's the problem. You cannot convert, you can't pull the gold out of the system, out of that currency. Even if they did do the BRICS currency, it is digital form only, and it is not convertible. And I say this really, really strongly, not just about currencies, but we're hearing a lot about asset-backed tokens, right?
Mm-hmm.
Asset-backed. If I can't pull that asset and convert that token into that asset and take possession of it, it's not backed. It's pegged. And if it's pegged, it means nothing. Absolutely nothing. Look at Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. They were attempting to get their population's confidence. They have done now 6 iterations of their currency since 2006, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the latest one is called Zimbabwe Gold, because it's presumably backed 40%, and they won't overprint and they won't do this, but digital only, and you cannot pull the gold out. And the population did not trust it. And they did a 44% overnight. They came out in, I think, April or May, and they did a 44% overnight devaluation in October. Hello. Backing and pegging. The only way something's truly backed, and I don't care what asset you are looking at, you have to be able to take possession, or it means nothing.
Got it. So backed means it's convertible. Got it. That was awesome. Thanks for that nugget. I feel smarter.
That is such an important nugget, and I don't hear anybody else talking about it.
Yeah.
But it's critical.
I like it. All right, so let's talk about fraud and manipulation of currencies and stuff, because gold is not immune to that either. Mm-hmm. JP Morgan got in a bunch of trouble. That was in the middle of COVID, and it was all quiet, and no one even talked about it. You can see on the chart, though, right, where it was and how it'd been down and how it separated from real estate as far as value, because typically they would rise together. Is that a threat moving forward?
Well, you know, it's interesting because you can check it out, and it is definitely a threat. It's why they have been able to suppress the price for so long, because in those spot, they don't call them spot gold and spot silver. They call them gold and silver. Why do they do that? They do that to make you think, oh, well, that's what gold is worth. Oh, well, that's what silver's worth. Except that these are simply contracts. Mm-hmm. And in 2009, before I knew print screen, unfortunately, but the Bank for International Settlements tracks global derivatives. Now they've changed their formulas, but before they did that, for every 1 ounce of gold that exists on the planet, there were 62,000 ounces of digital gold. So the market is thinking for every 1 ounce, there's 62,000 more ounces. And what does that do to the price? It pushes the price down.
Yeah.
So the place, you can't get that information. And I'm happy to tell you how to get the fundamental value of gold and silver. Mm-hmm. But there are two separate markets. You've got your digital, your paper markets, that's the spot market. And then typically this runs a little bit more than spot, and it kind of depends on the demand side as to what that premium is in between. Mm-hmm. So this is seen in two markets. But then you have this, which is the collectible gold coin market.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is a physical only market. So what's very interesting about this market, number one, it gives you a much cleaner view of what's really happening in the gold markets. And if you look at their ultra rarities, these are coins that'll go for many millions of dollars, right? So this is the area where the very, 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 very wealthy play, because this is not that kind of coin, but this could be a $15 million coin. That has broken out and broken above and been making all-time new highs for a few years now. Because anybody that can spend $15 million on a coin, they're probably an insider, you know, and they can also help formulate the rules, which comes to something else. And if you ask me, then I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lower level, which is where these would congregate and where we do most of our business. And it's not even marginally near that. You're talking a few thousand dollars. And still, that broke out second in the rise above to new highs. Although I don't know that, I'd have to go back and look. It's probably just about where it was in 2000.
Are you holding a collectible in your hand?
I am.
Okay.
See, it's slabbed, it's graded,
right,
et cetera. The spot gold market broke out last.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to know what the smart money's doing in the gold arena, you go to the ultra rarities and you can see.
Got it.
Right? So if you don't hold it, you don't own it. If it's just a digital asset and they can take it away from you, and it's so easy to manipulate. It's used for perception management, mm-hmm, because if they can manage how you perceive things, they can manage how you move forward. Mm-hmm. So this area is a teeny bit of both, teeny bit. You'll get a lot more honesty here. And the ultra rarities is where you'll know what the guys that are truly in the know are doing for themselves. Plus, central banks.
Mm-hmm.
How much gold are they accumulating? Well, more gold than they ever have since they started recording it back in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And guess when they started accumulating it? 2005. Yeah.
What was the moment there just before we collapsed?
Well, it became apparent to me in 2007 that I knew something nasty this way came, because the dollar against their trade-weighted basket fell to all-time new lows. And that was a trigger for me. Mm-hmm. And that was 2007. And so, you know, I was talking about this then. Of course, I got, oh, this is the best the economy has ever been. You're just a doom and gloomer. I'm not. I'm a technician. Mm-hmm. And I know that these things are way smarter than I am. So when they tell me stuff, I believe them and I talk about it. But then obviously it became obvious to everybody in September of 2008. But if you know what to look for, you want to get into a position before that, because
right,
we only have as much time as we have. And once our choices are gone, they're gone.
You brought something up when you mentioned the collectibles. So you see the late night infomercials, the guy selling in gold on online and saying, hey, this is the special Desert Eagle or whatever it is. Like, right? Is that just a sales pitch? It's just gold is gold, right?
That's new stuff. Okay. They don't know what they're doing. They're way overpriced. Yeah, it's
all
just
right. Good to know. Now I know.
Yeah.
So what I'm collectively taking from this is I want to continue buying real estate with long-term debt, and I want gold to diversify. Is that a good plan, or am I missing another important ingredient?
Well, you want to make sure that you have enough gold to cover your mortgage, your property taxes, and any income that you're generating from that, right? So it's hand in hand, but yes, if you want to be properly diversified and make sure that you're accumulating in the right way, then you need to have gold to offset that debt, because you never really own property 100% because you got property taxes. So yes, you certainly can make that choice.
Awesome. Would there be another ingredient there that you would think would put you in more of a stable, safe position?
Well, you know, personally, I own this property here. I own a property up in my bug out, which is 41 acres off grid. And I'm not accumulating real estate at this moment because I think that it's overvalued. But I also think that everybody needs a place to live and make their last stand. So I do believe that everybody needs to do what they're comfortable with. But this has been money for thousands of years. Nothing else has been. Nothing. Nothing. This stuff, this Bitcoin that was created in 2009, and wow, have you noticed all the cryptocurrencies are either gold, silver, or platinum? Why? Because they want you to trust them. That's why. But this is an experiment. And I'm not saying that it's not here to stay, because it is here to stay. They've created this market. It should be pretty obvious to everybody that Wall Street has adopted it. And they've turned it into an asset class, and they've done all of this with it. But it has to go through its test, and it hasn't done that yet. So personally, I do own real estate. I don't own any of this crap. This isn't real. It's just a depiction of what it is. But this isn't real either. Let it go through the crisis, and then you can see who is going to survive and where you actually want to put your wealth. But if we're talking about real estate, it's kind of like having two very tall buildings kind of next to each other, but there's a gap in between, right? And you got to get from this building that's collapsing to this other building. What are you going to use to get from there to here? If you try and use this, you're down at the bottom, you're dead, you're done. But if you use this, this is your bridge from this current system that's dying and this new system that they're putting in place.
Got it.
Just have patience. Just have patience. Let the markets do what the markets are going to do. And just be in a position to take advantage of it and have that wealth transition your way.
Got it. I brought up the word, and I don't think I've said this word in 15 years, but I brought up the word Armageddon. So I was like, I wasn't trying to base our whole foundation off of Armageddon, because it's very well, it can just go on as it's going as long as we're alive.
No. And the reason why I say that is for two big reasons. Well, there's probably more than that. All right. So forget the numbers. I'll just tell you. Number one, if you pull up the purchasing power of the consumer dollar, you will see that it is very, very, very close officially to zero.
Yep. I've seen it many times. Yep.
So if you see that, okay, so what happens when we hit zero? That's, they have to attack your principal because they've already taken all your purchasing power out. So it's the end of the dollar. What are the tools that the central banks have to regulate the rate and speed of inflation? Because that's their task. And that's interest rates and money printing. That's what it is. The more of this that they print, the less value that what's out there already has.
No, I got that. I got that. The one thing I did say that at the very end was that it continues to go on as long as we're alive, is what I meant. I mean, it's not going to happen tomorrow. I'm not dying. I mean, I might have another 30 years maybe. And it's like, well, maybe it happens in 31 years. You know, that's what I meant.
Yeah, no.
It's happening way before
There's no way, because they're out of tools. And a key pattern shift that broke a 40-year trend, which was the decline in interest rates, which is the tool that they have to regulate the rate and speed of inflation. Mm-hmm. We were anchored at zero for what, 15 years? And then all of a sudden they ratcheted it up. Still in the Fred. The Fred's great. You should explore it. Everybody should explore it. I'm not saying it's 100% accurate, but it's probably a bit more honest than what you're going to see elsewhere. When you see a major pattern shift that happens in 40 years, that is not a good sign. That is not a good sign at all. And so what President Trump is attempting to do with the stable coins is to broaden the base of buyer of dollar at the same time that the countries are shifting their buying of dollars. No, we don't have 30 years.
Okay.
I can't tell you exactly how long we have, but I don't think we even have 5 years.
Really?
Really. And not only that, but one thing that I track all the time is confidence, right? Mm-hmm. Because there are layers of confidence that have been built into the system, and I've been watching them systematically disappear. So in 2008, it was bank-to-bank confidence via the interbank lending rate, which just went to zero. They don't even publish it anymore. So banks lost confidence in each other. Then in 2015, with the Swiss surprise, so the Swiss central bank had their currency pegged to the euro, and they kept vowing, this is our highest concern. We're going to maintain this peg. And I can go into anything in detail that you want, but we're going to maintain it. We're going to maintain it. And I think everybody had been watching the synchronized central banks, whether they're money printing or with rates or what have you. We had a lot of synchronization up until then. And 2 days after they came out and they said, no, this is our very highest priority. Bam. They broke that peg. And so central bank to central bank confidence, gone, because it became obvious that the central banks ultimately will do what is in their best interest. And with what's going on right now, there is no coordination. Then I believe it was June of 22 when the central banks had been using what they call forward guidance since 2008 as a key tool. So they would tell the banks what they were going to do and corporations and give them an opportunity to get into position to benefit from them. And so they kept saying, we're only going to raise interest rates 50 basis points, 50 basis points, 50 basis points. And then bam, they did 75 basis points. And so the markets then learned, oh, we can't trust. And then all the central bankers came out and said, oh, no, we're not going to do forward guidance anymore. But the markets came out and realized that level of confidence in what the central banks guiding them to do, gone. So that only leaves one level of confidence, and that's the public. And that's the only thing that is truly keeping this whole game going, even though it's limping and it's declining and it's dying. But rapid inflation further erodes public confidence in the dollars, in those that are in power, et cetera. It's razor thin. And I had been saying for actually quite some time that I thought that the high inflation, they want you to think they have it under control. It's garbage. They don't. They change formulas, but they don't. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to see very obvious inflation by June. And that, you know, when the consumers lose confidence, I mean, that's 3/4 of our GDP. Mm-hmm. Real estate is 30% of our GDP. We are seeing a spike in missed payments. I'm not saying quite defaults yet, but I am seeing this goes back to 21 years. There's a crack in the consumer. There is a big, huge crack in the consumer. And that's the only thing that's holding this together. And whether or not they can build out that stable coin system fast enough, I don't think they can. And all that does is maintains buyers of this stuff, but it does nothing to protect the purchasing power, zero zip zilch. Mm-hmm. So no, I think we're lucky if we have 5 years.
All right. So we need to buy some gold.
Yeah.
We don't want to do it with the late night infomercial guy. Where's the best place to do that?
Zhang Enterprises.
I wish I knew somebody from there.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I got a girl. I got an inside scoop. Inside
you got
track.
An inside scoop.
So LynetteZhang.com is the best place to go?
That is one place that you certainly can go, but we're very active on YouTube and Twitter at the Lynette Zhang, Instagram and Facebook at Lynette Zhang. You know, I'm going to encourage people wherever they are to check out the Sound Money movement, where we are trying to get gold and silver legalized state by state in a movement ground up, because if we can get that to happen, I mean, my personal goal is to have sound money that is actually backed, which means you can pull it out of the system, back in the system again. I can't say that I'm going to be able to do that or not, because I'm only one person.
Real quickly, can you summarize that? You said you're looking to get it legalized. What's illegal?
Well, gold and silver are, this is legal tender in the US, right? That garbage.
What does that actually mean, legal tender?
That means that you can use, and there are a number of states where you can actually use gold and silver as legal tender and go into stores and shop.
Oh, okay. To transact, right?
Commerce. To transact.
Got it.
And also that removes the taxation. That's about perception management. And we could probably go another four hours.
I feel like 20 years ago, I would have been dying of boredom right now. But now I'm like, but you've got my...
Oh, no.
I'm aroused.
Wow, Matt.
You're going to have to come back and talk about it more.
I will happily come back. And I will tell you, I've been called many, many things in my lifetime, but boring has never been one of them.
No, definitely not. It was an absolute pleasure. I loved having you here. So if people wanted to get in touch with you and reach out to you, LynetteZhang.com. You also have an amazing YouTube channel, Lynette Zhang, and then all the socials by the same name, correct?
Absolutely. And we love human contact. So you can call us at 833. How's this for a number?
Yep. Get your pens out.
GLDZANG. So I'll translate that. 833-453-9264.
Got it. GLDZANG. I love it.
Yep. And to call us, it doesn't cost anything. We'll have this conversation with you. We're going to put your goals first before we make one recommendation. We really want to know where you're at, what you're trying to accomplish. And so we really are all here to be of service. And I think everybody will be very impressed with our staff.
That's awesome.
And our
anything like you, if you had anything to do with putting that together, I have no doubts.
Thank you.
You bet. It was a pleasure. Let's stay in touch. Have a good one.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye. And that wraps up the Epic Show. If you found this episode valuable, who else do you know that might too? There's a really good chance you know someone else who would. And when their name comes to mind, please share it with them and ask them to click the subscribe button when they get here, and I'll take great care of them. God loves you, and so do I. Health, peace, blessings, and success to you. I'm Matt Terrio, living the dream.
Yeah, we got the cash flow. You didn't know, homeboy, we got the cash flow.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.